You're listening to the Adam Tracy Underground Podcast, where it's not always advisable, but it is always endorsed.
Hello, going in, everybody. This is Adam Tracy. Welcome to the Adam Tracy Underground Podcast. And today I have with me Mistress, who has chosen to remain anonymous, which is fine and great. And Mistress, you are a
dominatrix.
Excellent. And we've had dominatrix on before, and we got some great insight. And it seems to me, at least in my research and having spoken to other people in the BDSM arena, that there's different business models, there's different means of marketing and different things like that. So I wanted to get your take and wanted to get your background and history and how you kind of go about and operate your business, how you make a go of it. So let me ask you this. How did you get into it? How did you start? What were you doing before? And then how did you go into this arena?
It's an interesting long story. I'll kind of give more of the shorter version. But I came to LA after I graduated college, and I was looking for a job. I mean, I had a college degree. I technically could have done a lot of different things, but I wanted to go into art. And, you know, with that, you need money, or like you need to afford your life somehow.
Yeah.
So I'm a musician. I was looking on Craigslist, actually, just kind of looking for something. I mean, also looking for fun. And
right. Looking at Craigslist usually leads you down the rabbit hole of like hell, right?
Oh, it really does. Yeah. So much on Craigslist, which now, I mean, it's been years since then, and Craigslist has changed a bit. I think certain things aren't allowed on there.
Yeah.
But I was looking, and there was kind of a strange ad that didn't exactly say what it was for, but it was saying it was looking for a tall, college-educated, pretty female. And my friend was looking at it, and she said, "Hey, this sounds like you." So I called the number. It was a guy who wanted to meet, and essentially he had a dungeon in his house, and he was having dominatrixes, or he was really having them come in, and he was training them to be a dominatrix, and he would let them use this dungeon in his house, and he would of course take a third of the profit, and he would be there, I guess, for protection. Mm-hmm. I say he was a pimp for dominatrixes. That's what I see him as now. So I came in there, I met with him. It sounded really attractive. I mean, the amount of money that you can make is pretty exorbitant. I mean, for the amount of time that you put in. So he was telling me you could make $300 an hour, which, well, $200 really, because he would take $100 of that, which still sounded great to me. And especially if he would train you and let you use all of his equipment, which he did have a lot of really nice equipment. So I came back, and I mean, I met with him, and I had a friend come with me, and I agreed to come and start training with him. So about a month was how long that lasted. He would put ads up for me. Like, he took photos and put these ads up on Backpage. I don't know if you remember that.
Sure.
It's taken down now, but that was where my original ads were. And I was kind of more of the girl next door type of dominatrix, like not really the full all out leather. I mean, it was more of an attitude thing for me, but I turned out to be really good at it.
Yeah.
I had a lot of repeat clients, and this guy just turned out to be very, very controlling and very domineering.
Right.
And I essentially left him. It didn't take very long. I mean, once I had the know-how, I was like, I can make my own dungeon. I don't need him. I don't need to give him a third of everything. And also, I don't even like him.
Right.
So I did that. I rented out a small space, a small studio space, and outfitted it with a few things, like just kind of the bare minimum that I knew what I could get by. And I also got people, I call them slaves, to buy me gifts and presents to use in the dungeon.
Right. So you kind of go to like this finishing school, if you will, for domineering, dominatrix, being a dominatrix, but it comes with this relationship with this, as you put it, kind of quasi pimp, right?
Yeah. So
it's like really just putting ads on Backpage, but charging you for doing this, right? And I guess his omniscience and teaching you some of the tricks of the trade.
Yes, exactly. And he didn't want you to know how to put the ads up. I mean, he didn't want me to see him do that. He definitely wanted to stay in control of the situation. And I see why, I guess. That was his bread and butter, essentially.
Yeah, I get that. So you go out on your own. You know, you create a dungeon. here you are on your own. Now, you've obviously built up some clientele, presumably from your time with the original individual. But how do you expand the business? Like, how do you market? Like, if you're familiar, I mean, and I don't know what the time frame necessarily, you don't need to tell me, but you know, nowadays, like you mentioned, Backpage having gone away and then elements of Craigslist having gone away, you know, you have Sesta and Fosta and the liabilities that come with being a website that promotes, this isn't illegal, but promotes any sort of that's sexual in nature, right?
Yeah, adult content.
Sexual in nature. So how do you get clients?
So for that period, I mean, I'd say about almost a year, maybe a little less than when I had that space in that dungeon, I was putting my own ads up and I was getting new clients that way. But these people tend to be very, very, very loyal and they'll keep coming back to you. You know, if you get some people that really like you, they're going to stay with you for years. So actually after Backpage shut down, I didn't find another site to market or put ads up. I actually just had a lot of the same clients coming back to me, which of course, maybe they'd stop coming or I wouldn't see them for a year or two or sometimes even longer. I mean, I actually just saw someone yesterday that I hadn't seen in maybe 4 years, but he still had my information. You know, I have an email that they can contact if they had contacted me or seen me back during that period. Right. So yeah. Mostly just same people. I haven't seen a new client in years now.
So it's a, sort of an affinity business, right? Like it's a repeat customer based on goodwill, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if they feel like they can trust you and they know you, because there are a lot of horror stories. There are a lot of guys that have told me they've gone to someone and they've been robbed, you know, or they've been tied up, which can easily happen. You know, that requires a lot of trust to allow someone to tie you up like that, but they've been tied up and then they get certain compromising photos taken of them. And the person says, all right, you're going to give me all of this money you have, you know, or else.
Right.
But they know, like, I'm not going to do that.
Right. Right. So there's like this inherent, you have a brand, right? And like inherently there's like some trustworthiness behind the brand is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Very much. So I've been very fortunate and I think I'm good at it too. And people just want to come back and see me.
Very cool. So somebody comes to you, like, so I, let's say I'm one of your repeat customers, right? And like, obviously, like I think about professional services, like an attorney by trade. And like, as I started out to like where I'm at in my career now, like my rates have progressively gotten higher. One, because I've got more experience, one, because things cost more, like as they always do over time. How do you like manage that? Like, how do you price things out, right? Like if I'm a long-term client and I was paying you X per hour at the beginning, is there a time where you go, hey, listen, cost, you know, gas is $4 a gallon, pal. Like I need more. Like, how does that work? How do you like actually structure pricing and like continuous pricing, subscription-based pricing?
Right. Well, so originally when I was working out of that one guy's dungeon, I was charging $300 an hour, but I would only get $200. So when I got my own dungeon, I just kind of assumed I could charge a little bit less for these people and I'd still get more money. So I started charging $250 an hour, which was still really good for me. And I really haven't much changed that unless the situation changes. Like I moved from LA and I lived in other cities, but I would still come back here and see clients that lived in LA. And in that case, I would have to rent a hotel for the night. Yeah. And in because of that, I would upcharge and I would tell them that and they would understand.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So like what's interesting about your story is like you've basically built a clientele and then haven't necessarily grown it. It was sort of like this parabolic, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was almost this parabolic sort of rise where you just built this client base that's exceedingly loyal and trustworthy of you. And that seems to be like the key within your industry, right? Like trustworthy.
Yeah.
And like, obviously you're talented. So like people go back because they're getting something from it. And then they come back. And so you literally turn off the marketing spigot some time ago, right? Like you never have to deal with these offshore websites. You don't have to deal with, I mean, do you take referrals? Like, how does that work? I mean, or are you just comfortable with where you're at in terms of who you have?
I think people have referred me before. I think that's happened, but I am someone who is very comfortable with what I have. I'm also very busy doing other things. This is not my only income stream or my only dream, like my only passion that I want to do. There's so much I want to do, but this definitely has been a great way to stay afloat and enjoy my time in LA. I'm living here again, and so I'm able to see people on a much more regular basis. But mm-hmm. when I was out of town, I was only here maybe once a month or maybe twice a month. So I would message a few people that I knew would want to see me, and I would kind of arrange it that I could see a bunch of people in one day. And for some people, I've done house calls. I've gone to their house. And in that case, I can sometimes charge more. Depending on the interest, there are some things that I can upcharge for that as well. So, but yeah, I've been very steady as far as it is. I don't really want to see new clients either, because dealing with that process and sifting through all of the people, it's rough. It's hard. You have to deal with a lot of flakes.
Yeah.
That's what we call them. People who will make appointments with you and just not show up. Right. And that happens so, so often. I mean, especially that first year when I was doing it. But now that I have people also that I trust and know, I mean, of course, things happen sometimes and people can't meet with you. But when it's someone you know actually is trying to meet with you, you know, you can be much more accommodating.
Right. And then as far as like your array of services, right? Like, is there a disparate like menu, right? Like, it's not all the same. I know this, right? It's not cookie cutter. Like, one guy comes in and it's like, okay, fine. Like, I'm into this, or I want to see this, or want to do this, or whatever. Do you charge different based on like the amount of time that you have to put in to accommodate whatever they're seeking? Is there one size fits all pricing, or is it just like, okay, you know, this guy's into X and X is more than what Y happens to be, because I've got to do something that takes more of my time?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely is a factor. Yeah. And there are some people too that maybe they don't even want an hour or even 30 minutes. I mean, I have had people just come buy my underwear. So, you know, there's a different price menu for that. Yeah. I've had people come buy a jar of my pee. Yeah, there's different prices for some of these things, you know?
A lot. Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like a good business. I'm thinking maybe I get into that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're not using it, so.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thing. So let me ask you this. Do you consider, because there's so much misconception around it, right? Like, it really is a fetish, you know, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, do you consider yourself a sex worker?
I technically am. I think that there's, you know, a lot of weird feelings around that word. And I'm also not having sex. Right. So, you know, I like to think that I'm not, but I mean, I am technically. It's that field. And nothing against anyone who is doing that. I just know, like, actually having sex is not for me, you know?
Yeah. But do you sense competition from the girls that, the women that do, right? For instance, like, we spoke with one dominatrix, which was really just kind of like a front for an escort, right?
Like, yeah.
Do you sense like competition with the true sex workers? Like, do you like, have you lost clients or sense that you could have built a bigger stable of clients had you been a true sex worker? Not that there's anything wrong with that, just.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't feel any sense of competition necessarily, because that's just not what I offer. And that's not really what people are coming to me for. I mean, to me, I feel like if you truly want to be dominated by a woman, I don't really feel like sex should be on the table. What they typically do at the end is they finish themselves, you know?
Right.
And to me, that is more of appropriate for the situation and what it is calling for, you know, and often they're getting off on the fact that I am telling them to do it and I will not touch them. But there have been people, of course, that have wanted that or have wanted to do things that, like, I have certain lines. And of course, there are people that will want to cross those lines or want me to cross those lines. And I just stay really firm on that. If I lose a client, that's fine. I mean, at this point, especially, which none of them would do that. But in the beginning, I didn't mind. They could just go to someone else, you know, because I was making enough anyway. I mean, what do I need? Like a couple hundred more dollars? Right. I don't know.
Right. I got you. So the competition is really just based on solely focused on this particular like fetish, if you will, right, on the BDSM like routine, and it's not, you're not in direct competition with some girl who's on only, you know, OnlyFans or whatever. I mean, that's like a whole nother thing that people aren't necessarily judging buying decisions with you on.
Mm-hmm. I think with fetishes, there's so many different ones. They're so varied and so specialized depending on the person that my look or what I'm good at, it's hard to feel a lot of competition with anyone else, because if someone is into a different look or if someone is into a different style or different services that I don't offer, that's just what they're into.
Yeah.
And we're all in the industry together. Someone else is, at least someone's getting paid, right? And someone's getting what they want. So, and that works good.
I should form a union or something. Yeah. So as a whole, like, I mean, you're obviously multifaceted and have different talents. Like, would you say today as it stands, is it a self-sustaining business that like you can make a palatable income on, or is it more something you're gravitating out of? And is there a timeline, right? Like, you know, obviously with anything, right? And is there a timeline where you start to sort of lose your cachet, right? Like, because people get older, right? Like, and I'm not saying anything about your looks or your abilities or anything like that, but in theory, you know, you can't, and again, you're not, this is a terrible comparison, but I'll make it. You can't be on the pole forever, right? Like, you know what I mean?
Like,
those girls eventually just phase out because younger girls come in and things like that. Like, so as far as a career arc, right, where do you sense you are? Or is this something that, because it's such a fetish and because it's so specific, you really have a longer life cycle than you do as like a traditional sex worker would?
Well, I do think there is a time limit, certainly. I mean, it's not something you can do forever or probably would want to do forever. I actually have done a session where there was another dominatrix present, and she was much older. She was looked to be about in her 50s, I think. So, I mean, depending on your equipment and your skills and your clientele, one could do it for a long time. It really is going to depend on the clients and if they want to keep seeing you. But some people are going to want to see younger women, and that's okay too. I mean, it's a business where I think you would want to make your money while you can make your money, and then move on to something else. I mean, it's not something you could do forever. You certainly can't do this when you're, I don't know, when you're, I guess no one wants to work when they're in their 70s, but you know, that would be very difficult to do this job. It can get very physical.
I don't want to work in my 40s, right? And so, I mean, that's already blowing me by. So I get that. That's an interesting argument. But listen, I think I'm out of questions for you, but it's been enlightening, to say the least. It's been very enlightening.
Great.
I appreciate your candidness and your honesty. And it's a fascinating business model, because for the people that listen to our podcast, which is really like focused on gray market stuff, right? It's really something that has such like cachet, and it's such a unique like trust-based business, and it's not as transactional, right? Like, so much of like gray and black market is just transactional. Like, traditional sex working, it's very transactional. Like, we've talked mostly very transactional. Drug running, very transactional. Like, anything's this is like very different and perfectly legal, obviously, but like, it's just so trust-based and like brand-based that it's really fascinating for this kind of arena, if you will, for lack of a better word. So again, I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time. And if you want to plug anything, feel free to plug anything. But if not, we'll wrap it up. And you have my sincerest gratitude for coming on.
Great. Yeah. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it. I'll have to go listen to the podcast now.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Please do. So thank you. And again, everybody listening, this is the Adam Tracy Underground Podcast. Check us out on SoundCloud and wherever podcasts are listened to. And we will talk to you next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Adam Tracy Underground Podcast. For more episodes, visit us at adamtracy.io or your leading podcast providers.